This is Alaska Public Media's Community in Unity, our community dialogue series. I'm Ann Hillman with the Solutions Desk. For this conversation, we went inside Spring Creek Correctional Center, the maximum security prison in Seward, Alaska. Community members from Seward joined inmates and staff in the prison's large open visiting room. Sitting mixed together in a circle, participants spoke about life behind prison walls and how inmates are working toward restorative justice. So the idea behind today's conversation is that prisons really are part of our communities. We all either know people who have been in prison, we've been in prison ourselves, we work in prisons. They're part of the larger community. And so the conversation today is about what's going on behind the walls. We often talk about prisons, we hear about prisons in the media, but we don't always necessarily get the perspectives of people's lived experiences. And so that's what we're doing today. It's a chance for folks who are currently serving time here at Spring Creek to talk about their experiences, to dispel some myths. It's a chance for community members to ask questions, be like, well, I've always wondered. And for staff to say, well, this is what I've seen, and these are the changes I've seen over the time. And the idea is that this will be recorded, it'll be broadcast around the state with the intention of bringing awareness to people beyond just who's sitting in this room right now. In this conversation, we're all part of the same community and we're all part of on the same playing field. We all have knowledge and experiences to bring and to share. But in entering conversations on topics that can somehow sometimes be very close to home. So I'm actually going to start with Matthew, because he is part of what here at Spring Creek is called the Restorative Justice Group. And I want him to talk a little bit about what that group is and does, and to give you some sort of context of what some of the conversations that are happening right now within Spring Creek are.
Hello, and I would like to just thank everybody for being here. My name is Matthew Moore. I'm a prisoner serving time at Spring Creek, and I also am one of the co-chairs for the Spring Creek Restorative Justice Initiative. Most of the prisoners, just about all of the prisoners here tonight, are involved with the Restorative Justice Initiative. They're on the committee. Restorative justice is a theory of justice which emphasizes the human causes and consequences of crime rather than things like retribution and community condemnation. It focuses on three stakeholders: the criminal offender, the victims, and the community. It doesn't recognize the state as a legitimate stakeholder in any setting, capacity, or whatever. In restorative justice, it seeks to step away from the traditional American model of incapacitation, where we separate a criminal offender from society and poof, all of a sudden our problems are done and over with. It seeks to bring the offender and the victim back to being whole again. The Restorative Justice Initiative here at Spring Creek began earlier this year, actually through what was originally the Mindful Abilities Prison Project, which was just a group of prisoners that were getting together and they wanted to try to make something better here. They wanted to take an active role in making this place better suited to reform prisoners. They wanted to take a stand. And 6-8 months later, we are doing a lot of stuff actually here at the prison. We have a lot of classes in the evening that are peer-led courses. We've engaged in an ongoing dialogue with the administration here. We've got people coming down to meet with us. I mean, we're trying to get stuff going.
Why?
Well, and that's an excellent question, why? It's out of a uniform recognition that when we live in a state or a country that has 66% recidivism rate amongst criminal offenders almost across the board, I mean, something's wrong. Nobody's needs are being actually met. Criminal offenders aren't being reformed. Society is suffering as being victimized again. Taxpayers are spending money for prisons and things that don't actually solve the problems. And so at this point in our lives, we've decided that we wanted to take action, to do what we can. It's real easy to sit back and criticize the administration. Well, this prison sucks. They don't know anything. It's easy to criticize staff members and say that they're the problem. But if you're not willing to actually take a step and do something about it, then, you know, what right do you really have to complain? We've actually just started. January, February is when we began. And it all began really just with asking for a meeting with the administration and getting a conversation started about, can we do something? And it hasn't been as smooth. I mean, in a maximum security prison, there's going to be security concerns. There's going to be, you know, different headaches and speed bumps along the way. But so far, everything has been really good. We've had a very positive response from prisoners, a very positive response from staff members. Oftentimes, it's difficult to get large groups of people, like all the people that work here. There's 200 people that work here. To get them to accept something new, like, hey, we know we've never trained you to do this, but we're going to start trying this now, it's difficult. It's difficult for prisoners to accept change. You know, our lives within an institution is very, very structured. And any little change is always met with, like, well, what's going on? What are you trying to pull on us? You know, so we've been able to overcome most of those hurdles really well just in the short time. So
you keep referencing the administration, and you're sitting next to the administration. Why don't you introduce yourself and talk about why? Tell me your perspective on the restorative justice movement.
Okay, my name is Bill Opinskas, superintendent at Spring Creek. 24 years in November I've been here. In that 24 years, I haven't seen a significant change in the recidivism rate. So as a superintendent, to continue applying the same methods and practices we've used for the last 30 years with an expectation of success is lunacy. I can guarantee you that no matter what I do, I will not make the recidivism rate any worse. So I'm game to try anything. If we're connecting victims to offenders and starting that dialogue, and that helps in the healing process on the outside as well as here, and it helps the recidivism rate, then good on us. But we're building a stronger community here with our efforts. We're opening up dialogue between staff and the prison population here that we never had before, and we're building trust that a lot of folks have never really known, you know, especially from an authority figure. So I see it as a win-win. I might not fix the recidivism problem, but I will make my prison a stronger community. I don't want to retire here as a superintendent. I want to retire here as the mayor of a nice community with its problems, but we're working on them.
My name is Anthony Garcia. What we're trying to do is to present the community with better prisoners, less angry prisoners, more skilled prisoners, things of that nature. We're trying to get prisoners in here to try to learn some spiritual principles, moral values, ethics, stuff like that, so they can be better people, you know what I mean, just so they can be caring individuals and care about society, members of society, stuff like that. So,
but does that matter for people who are going to be here for a long time? Like, why is it important for folks who may not even be released to be more caring people?
For me, it's just I've changed over the years. I've been in here almost 28 years. And I've become a better person. I've become a more caring person just because of what I've learned through, you know, spiritual stuff like that. So whatever it takes for a person to change, they need to find that and do it. But for me, I do it because it feels good to help people. And the youngsters are coming in here. They need a little guidance. I think it's up to the old guys to go ahead and try to give that to them. But it makes me feel good. I'm going to be here a while still, but I do want to do what I can to help.
I'd actually like you to talk about that a little bit more. You say the youngsters are coming in here. Are you, if folks who have been incarcerated for a longer time, the older guys, don't provide guidance, what happens? Like, what kind of effects, like when you first entered prison, what kind of effects did it have on you as you were as a person?
Well, not very good, not good effects, but the times are changing. It used to be pretty negative. Superintendent Lipinskas was talking about, the mentality of prison is changing. The attitude towards prisoners are changing, and that's a good thing. It's a positive thing. I forgot the question.
My original question was, when you first started here in prison, what were the attitudes? Like, who were you when you started? And did the prison community reinforce that in a positive or a negative way?
I was an angry person. I was a violent person. I deserved to be in prison for what I did. But as I got older, I changed, you know what I mean? But it ain't about the past. It's about right now what we can do now. It's about teaching the youngsters to be better people. For me, I got it through spiritual stuff. We got spiritual classes in here. There's different programs that are available here. And they do work if you take them serious. They do work. For me, I found some, I run my life on some spiritual principles now. And they work for me. And they won't work for everybody, but it does work on some. I mean, we have classes, and some of the youngsters have changed, and they've made real change, and it's for real. You know what I mean? They ain't just faking or nothing. They're actually, they changed for the better, and it's worth it. So, you know, yeah.
What about people out in the community? I mean, he's saying, the question is, what's a youngster?
Just the new guys, the guys who haven't done a lot of time, the guys who come in here and they think they got to act a certain way just to get along or whatever. And I think it's up to the old guys to kind of give them some guidance in a positive way. So.
When you say act a certain way, like, what do you mean?
Oh, I don't know. You know, youngsters are youngsters, kids are kids, people act crazy just because, so.
Does anyone else have any more specifics? Like,
my name's Nick. I've been there for a little while. I was one of those youngsters that came in. When you come in, you hear these grandiose stories of these guys that have done these crimes from way back when, and sometimes we try to model ourselves after what they've done. But then when you come in and you see them and you see that they're changed and they're a different person, it gives you a different idea of what kind of model they are. And so what he's trying to say is the older guys are giving them a different model of what they have in their head already. You know, the young guys come in and they think that, oh, these are the badasses, excuse my language, but these are the guys that are the guys, you know? And when you meet these guys, they're not what the newspaper says. They're much more than that. And they say that you have to respect yourself and you have to respect who the people that you're around. You have to respect your community. That changes the youngsters' mentality, because now the guys that are the leaders of the community are not as negative as they thought they would be, you know? So now I have no choice but to be a positive person. You know, if I go be negative over here, I'm gonna be shunned and nobody's really gonna mess with me, because that negativity is not conducive to the positive stuff that we have going on with the compound, you know, so.
Would you say that's true of everyone in Spring Creek, this entire prison, everyone's like, yay, let's be positive and better people?
It's not necessarily let's be positive. It's okay, we have these opportunities to live a little more comfortably. Let us live comfortably.
What does that mean in this context?
In this context, it's, I don't know, without being too specific, it's just like...
You can be as specific as you want.
it's not having to worry about too much, you know?
I don't know.
The prison, the preconceived notion for prisons is very negative. It's a war zone, you know? We don't want it to be necessarily a physical war zone, because our population is small and we live in a community that's super small and we have really strong family ties. A lot of people are, because the cities are so small, you know, I could be your cousin and he could be your cousin by marriage and stuff. So now I have to look out for you. And then we pack up like that and we have to watch each other's back. Well, the best way to watch each other's back is to be comfortable, to be safe, you know, so that we don't have to be violent and have to be, you know, super aggressive all the time. So that's comfortable. Comfortable is just like in a community. You guys want to be safe. You want to be a community. You want to know that you can go to this side of town or that side of town and not have any worries. You know, that's how we want to be. We want to be the same way. You know, we learn. We realize, a lot of us have realized that this is the kind of pain that we inflicted on the community out here. Okay, let's get out of that. Let's get out of that. You're always going to have people that are angry. You're always going to have people that are vengeful and stuff like that. But if we bond together to be men about it, you know, those kind of people, not necessarily be shunned, but they'll have no choice but to change. Even if the change takes a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, they'll have to change. And if we can get one person to change that has come to Spring Creek with all the stories of this is how Spring Creek was, blah, blah, blah. If we get one person to change and go out to the streets and say, no, man, there's a better way of living, then that might change a 16, 17, 18-year-old. You know, that might change the guys that's in McLaughlin that's already on the path to be, you know, to be stronger criminals, I guess you could say. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've got, when you started jumping into this conversation, so I would like you to add your two cents, and
then
I got
it. My name is Mike Lawson. I work in the education department here at Spring Creek. My outlook is to educate. If we don't educate the people that are here at Spring Creek, when they get out, they're going to be the same people. They don't have another alternative to make a living. I teach a vocational class. I teach a business class. And the first business class I taught, we put out a notice. And we received 85 requests to be in that business class. This class was only for 12 people.
Wow.
And, we are now doing a second business class so that more people can get involved in it. And the first class all graduated and got 3 college credits for it. And it's through a inmate-sponsored programs that, this is stuff the inmates do for other inmates.
Because you're also incarcerated here.
Yes, I am. I am and will be for the rest of my life.
All right. But you're working to make it better for those who won't be.
Exactly. I don't want anyone to follow my footsteps. Mr. Garcia said and Nick said, there's young guys coming in here. I have grandchildren almost as old as them. And, it's just kind of heartbreaking to see it. And, I just hope for the best for them. They're coming in and doing these 2 and 3 year stints, and they keep coming back and keep coming back. And, we have to break the chain somewhere. And I am a firm believer education is part of breaking that chain.
So something that Nick brought up was Nick was talking about how, people have all these preconceptions about what it's like here in prison. I would love to hear from some community members about what you expected when coming in here, what you think it's like in the parts of the prison that you can't see right this second. What did you all think before you got here? Or what are your images of prisons? What were they maybe before you were incarcerated? What were they as you were living out in the community or before you started working here?
My name's Justine. I live here in Seward, and I can't speak for everyone, but I think it's pretty much just a mystery. It's just across the bay. You can see the tower. You can see the walls, and that's pretty much it. There's a huge disconnect, I think, between Spring Creek and town, and that's always been something in the back of my head. That's why I'm here, because I feel like, in a way, we are part of the same community. We share the same environment. But there's a whole group of people I don't know anything about. So
what do you want to know?
Some basic things. I'm curious what, the daily routine is and what's difficult for people being in prison here, what would be helpful, if there's any sort of community connections or programming that we can do. The one connection I have had with the prison was I did an art project a couple years back with the Boys and Girls Club that was funded through the Arbor Club here. We did a mural, and they, I don't know exactly how the connection happened, but the Arbor Club, the mural was for Arbor Day. So we got funding from that one group, and I had wanted to come and see them and thank them or do something, and there just wasn't an infrastructure for that. But I've always appreciated that the Arbor Club supported our art project with the kids. But otherwise, it just feels like this big gap. So.
Okay, well, that's a lot of things to address. where should we start? Do we want to start with the ways Spring Creek is connected?
Okay, my name's Taylor Smith. I'm a prisoner here at Spring Creek, and I'm also a co-chair on the Restorative Justice Initiative. So as far as day-to-day life in here, it's just dependent upon the prisoner and how they want to do their time. If you want to stay involved in programs, now we have programming day and night for the most part. And, there's people that just want to read books or watch TV, and, that's their option. But we try to get people more involved in the educational aspect of it. And, you know, a big core belief that we have with this initiative is that we believe that each individual has a unique gift, something that they could give back to the community, even in this community. And so, you know, they give somebody a sense of purpose. So we created avenues to where, like, you have Mike Lawson, this, he teaches business. He has that avenue to teach the business class. You have Nick, he's very creative, he's artistic. Now he teaches an art class. For whatever reason, I'm teaching yoga. I'm not the best at it, but it's something that helps me. It's something that helped me get in control of my emotions. And so it's something that I found useful to pass on to anybody that's willing to listen. And, you know, that's one thing that we believe. If you give somebody, a man, a sense of purpose or a sense of well-being, like, he can provide something, it would change the mentality, and it really has. And, you know, we encourage people to do that. And as far as the bridge and not being able to reach back, you know, we're hoping to be able to build a bridge between the communities, especially here in Seward. You know, we do try to reach out to the community a lot, and we would like to have more involvement. You know, there's a lot of people that like to do positive things, and they would love to just, you know, you have people in the hobby shop all day making things, and they just want to give it to somebody that it would make their day. And so, you know, we would really like to bridge that gap and be more involved in the community. And, you know, there's a lot of people that really want to make amends. You know, there's a lot of people that have done wrong and want to do right. Me personally, I would like to end this life having done more good than bad. And, you know, I'm at that point where all I want is to do good. And, you know, any opportunities that we have to do good, we would like, you know, we would like to reach out. So, I mean, any ideas that the community has of what we can do to help, you know, we're sitting here with idle time. We have, you know, a lot of things that we can reach out and help with. So, I mean, anything that y'all could think about, that would be, you know, that would be big for us.
Yeah. So ideas, it sounds like they're open to ideas. Matthew, and I'd like one of you guys to explain clubs at one point here.
I'm not the club guy, but...
Are one of you guys the club guy?
I wanted to... there's a couple of them here, so they'll have plenty of time. I wanted to respond to a couple of questions that she had. Initially, like, when you say, what is the routine like in Spring Creek, like, just out of curiosity, it's monotonous. It's prison. There's a standard daily schedule that the prison operates on, and there may be small, slight deviations, but for the most part, this is how your day-to-day life will be. And like when Taylor talks about, you know, a prisoner can choose how he spends his time, well, most of us have a routine. Some of us work, some of us work out, some of us run laps, some of us, you know, so like everybody does their thing, but we're all operating on a certain amount of recreation time, a certain amount of time in our housing units, and a certain amount of time that you're locked in your room. And so prison's monotonous. I mean, and that's sort of a no-brainer, but I think that's what you were asking. But on a bigger issue that the lady had asked, you know, like she said that they look across the bay and they see the tower, and that's kind of all they really know about Spring Creek. That's nobody really has much connection here. You know, historically in America, you have prison communities where most people that live in the town are related to somebody that works at the prison, are related to somebody that lives in the prison, and the town sort of functions as a prison town. Seward's not like that. Seward existed before this prison was built, and if it shut down today, the community would feel the economic impact, but it would continue. It's not like Seward would dry up and be no more. And in that regard, a common view amongst the prisoners that are involved with the Restorative Justice Initiative is that the community of Seward is in a somewhat unique position to sort of bridge the gap that exists between prisoners, re-entering felons, and the communities that they're re-entering. into. Historically here at Seward, there has not been a lot of involvement with the community. And one of the drawbacks of that is that people in the community don't understand a variety of issues that prisoners and staff face. People in the community don't understand that it's not so easy for a prisoner to come to prison, reform, and rejoin society as a productive member. Like, a lot of people might be sitting there like, well, how could some guy get 3 felony convictions in 10 years and what a loser and all these things? And they don't realize that once you have a felony conviction, it's very difficult for you to rejoin the community. Sometimes it's impossible. You add in that prisoners have, you know, most of us come from sketchy backgrounds. You can say that we're from marginalized groups or whatever. Another misconception, I think, that gets overlooked in society's eyes is the importance of the job that your day-to-day correctional officer does. And it's something that gets left out of, like, the legislative debates about appropriating funding for the department and how much money should they get and all of these kinds of things. Like, essentially, nobody has taken into account that, like, these are the human resources charged with the day-to-day rehabilitation of the criminal offenders. And they cut the budgets and they cut the programs. And so when you're an administrator, you're left like, well, we got to keep the lights on. We got to keep the doors locked. We got to keep everybody from dying. And that's all you can focus on. I don't know if people in the Seward community realize that there's like 200 people that work here that are in the front lines of public safety. I don't know if the people in this community realize that there's actually, like what Taylor was saying, a lot of prisoners who would like an opportunity to begin a discussion about becoming a community member. And I think that's something that's overlooked. Like you said, you know, they see the tower across the bay and look at it when you drive by or something.
So one of the things you mentioned were the struggles, and one of the things that came up was the struggles involved when you're rejoining the community after. For those of you who are here who have experience either leaving prison and coming back or leaving prison and doing well, what are some of the struggles that you face that you think that people don't get?
My name's Lamont Moore. I'm also a coach here.
Speak up.
I've been released a whole lot of times. I'm not from Alaska, I'm from California. I've been doing this since I was 12 years old. And my biggest thing was the rejection. It's like I go put in an application and nobody calls me back. So you stoop down lower than what you applied for and still nobody call you back. I went all the way down as to be the man in the Little Caesars costume just to provide for my family and kept getting denied. So I went back to what I knew how to do. And so I sold drugs for a living. I was a professional drug dealer. And I provided for my family, but that was my biggest downfall. And outside of that, I didn't do nothing wrong. I mean, well, until I came back this time, but I made sure I got 2 daughters. My daughters really needed a lot of things. I was homeless out there living from pillow to post. And it's like how Matt said, once you had that first felony, it's hard. I even tried to go to the Army, but I got tried as an adult when I was 13 and it prevented me from going to the Army. So I just kept getting kicked back. And it was like, this is what you got. Then it's a little more resources here in Alaska, but I'm from Compton. And it's really not too much that you're going to have coming unless you leave from up out of there. And when I went, I finally made it to Alaska, and I was a business owner. I had a business, and I was a vice president of a corporation out here. But I still made the mistake because it was so installed into me of my values and my lifestyle, I shot a dude for no reason. And I mean, it didn't even have nothing to do with nothing that I had going on, but I made an unconscious decision And it was just hard because it was, like how they say, you're kind of a product of the environment. It just happened. And then after it happened, I said, damn, man, why did I do that? I just jeopardized everything that I had. Now, I done already made the mistake. Now it comes to my family. Oh, man, how's my family going to provide for themselves? And it just constantly repeats itself over and over again. And it's like, where do you go? I mean, and it's like now getting out again, how is the community going to look at me now? I done shot a guy. I done sold some more drugs. Are they going to give me another chance? And it's always like sketchy because nobody wants to be let down, especially when you got a whole family that's looking for you for support and you can't do wrong in your kids' eye. But man, my dad can't even get a job. Why won't nobody hire my dad? So when they ask you for something, you're going to go right back to what you knew how to do. And it's, and that's kind of what I'm stuck in. It's like a repetitive cycle. So I figured that if I participated in this, maybe I could install values into myself. And then, like, in my community, I was like a leader, you know, and maybe the youngsters that's coming through now would be like, well, oh, the big homie did it. I can do it too. So now I can use my negative for a positive and kind of help people out. I never thought that I would be sitting on this panel. I never thought I'd be teaching an anger management class. I never thought I'd be trying to teach the houses of healing with the rest of the co-chairs. And it's like, man, it gets me psyched every day. Man, I've been sitting here nervous. I'm over here sweating and everything. Like, this is like just all doing. I think we all need this to make it over a bridge in our life to kind of feel accepted. It's like getting accepted in prison. So when we finally make it to get out of prison, it's like, oh, man, they accepted us 2 years ago. So it shouldn't be hard now. So, man, I just want to say thank you guys for coming out here, man, because it's really helping us more than you guys think it is. So thanks.
You're listening to Community in Unity, a conversation at Spring Creek Correctional Center with inmates, staff, and Seward community members. They're talking about how the inmates and their fellow prisoners are working together to build a stronger community, both inside and outside of the prison walls. For many of the community members, it was their first time at the prison. The event was recorded in September 2017.
I was going to speak on the clubs. You had asked some questions about the clubs. We have 7 different clubs here. That is our community.
Clubs. Like, when you say clubs, I'm like, oh, you go play hockey together? Like, what? Well,
no, they're clubs. Actually, I'm a president of BOA, which is Brotherhood of Alaska. My mission is to support the visiting room, the hobby shop tools, and education. Nick is the president of Bonsai. His club does horticulture, arts and crafts. Each club has their own mission and responsibility for the population of Spring Creek. We are voted in by the population of Spring Creek.
Like, you just create your own clubs? Like, who comes up with the topics of the clubs, and then you support things with money that you get from where?
We are funded by we have a store here at Spring Creek. The clubs are funded by the inmates who purchase stuff at the store. None of the state, we get no state money. All our money comes from the inmates. It's divided up amongst 9 accounts. And we have banquets, cultural banquets, like we just yesterday had the Native Culture Banquet. That's all paid for by inmate funding. Education, the business class I teach, is paid for by inmate funding. Actually, Time Club is paying for the business. That's another club here. They're not gangs, they're clubs.
Okay, so they're like organizations, and then money from these clubs also goes back into the wider community, into the Seward community?
Yes, it does. We support, well, we're a very large sponsor of the wrestling club here. This year, we have given $3,000 cash, and we're in the process of donating probably another $3,000 to $5,000 stuff for their auction that's coming up in October. We believe in supporting the community. We, you know, that's our community too. You guys, I mean, we're just a fence between us. You know, you are our community. You give us our lights, you give us our water, you know. We do the fire department, Boys and Girls Club.
Rotary Club. I was just trying to help them out a little bit.
Good community.
Yeah, there's a lot of places we donate to, and we love to donate to them. Mm-hmm. What we would like is some, like the guys in the hobby shop, all that stuff usually comes out of their pockets that they donate. If we could get, like, some of the community members who buy gifts to sell to the tourists when they come in, buy some gifts from us. You know, that's what we would like. So we can keep our, these guys are buying out of their pockets. Help us help you.
So if you, like, how does that work? Like, if shops here were to buy stuff from the hobby shop at the prison, and maybe this is a question better for Bill, but like, would the money then go back into some general account to fund individuals or for clubs, or like, how would that money cycle work?
Okay, for example, if I made a bracelet, and that bracelet was sold to a vendor in town, that money would be paid directly to me, and I would make more and sell more.
Or our clubs can put a project proposal together to where we buy materials to make a mass or a large quantity of things, and we'll sell it in the guise of the club organizations, and the guys that helped us make it, you know, we'll give them incentives like coupons for our store or something, and the money will come back to us and it'll cycle back out just like that. We can do it like that so that it doesn't necessarily come to one individual person. It can come back to the individual clubs. We can do it like that.
So there's ways to help.
There definitely is ways to do it. It's just having conversations like this, and then seeing the merchandise that we have. We have a display case over here in the corner that is actually a sample of some of the stuff that the guys do in the hobby shop. And I believe you can go buy that right now. I believe it's cash only. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I'm just saying, man, you know.
Good for people to know.
Not like I have anything in there or nothing. Yeah.
Let's jump back to, you guys make a lot of things that end up going back into the community as donations for auctions. You just give money. You were buying donuts to raise money for the wrestling club at one point. Like, how does that make you feel to give back in that way?
Well, for me, my son was born while I was incarcerated, you know, and he's getting older. Now he's in a different state. Certain things I can't do for him that I would love to do for him. But if I know that I can do something for his generation, whether it's the kids here, kids in Anchorage, kids in Wasilla, if I know that I can do something for them, it makes me feel like I'm doing something for my child, you know, because, I mean, they deserve it, you know. We have a lot of incarcerated fathers that have a disconnect, that want to be with their children and have no choice to be with their children. But if we can at least do something for somebody's kid, at least do something for somebody's a single mother or something, a single grandparent, you know, that makes a difference, you know. The mentality makes a difference. Yeah. I don't think we meant to distract you from your earlier question, though.
Yeah.
I kind of don't remember what you asked.
It's because I asked a lot of questions. So my earlier question was... What was my earlier question? No. Earlier I was... Challenges are coming out and like getting stuck in these cycles. So how do you change your own personal thought processes? I'm going to go over this way, then I'm going to go over that way. How do you change your own thought processes so your thoughts are not stuck in this cycle? But then how do you break out of having to check the box on your application?
So I'm John Woodard. I had the luxury of entering through the front door. I spent over 13 and a half years on this yard, and I have the luxury of not wearing yellow because I'm still technically incarcerated. I have an ankle monitor on. Okay, so just for the people here, I'm a product, a success, people say, of coming out of Spring Creek. I was able to, through the resources here, educate, get an education. get a couple college degrees, get certifications and things like that, and then go out into the working world. I did encounter challenges. Some of the jobs that I thought I was fit for, you know, that I wrote my resume for, they didn't quite work out. But for other people involved in the community, like the Iron Workers Union, they offered a program to a training and employment program, and I got involved in that, and so far that's been successful. But some of the common things you'll see is guys wanting to do good and give back in here. I was just part of this 2.5 years ago. You know, I was working with Nick, working with Mike, working with Tony, working with all these guys in here that are trying to, this is the restorative justice group, but I was part of the prison organizations, the clubs, right? And so we did a lot, and they continue to. They're doing, you know, light years more than, you know, we were just a couple years ago, and that's great. And it's because of the administration and the change of the whole perception of things. So,
What do you mean the change of the perception?
Well, I would say you have an administration that has a different perception about justice, right? And so they're allowing the inmates to give back, develop themselves, find what they do best, and develop that, showcase it, and then lead by example. You know, what they're doing is really great. And, you know, the education, the spiritual development, all these, you know, fundamental things, the guys really need to be successful out there. You know, I see guys every day going into the EM office, and some guys are just struggling because they didn't prepare themselves. They weren't shown, or nobody was an example for them while they're in. Some of these guys were short-term guys. Maybe they came in and they're serving the first couple years. They served just a couple years. But here at Spring Creek, you have a lot of long-term prisoners, and they have they've chosen to take jobs to take on that role, even if they're not getting out right away, even if the door is, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, or, you know, unfortunately, maybe never. They still want to make a difference. They still want to see these guys succeed who maybe are getting out, or who come in and they're disillusioned, you know, about the whole criminal justice system. They think they have to act a certain way. These guys are leading by example, and this administration is giving them the opportunity to do that. And it's really, really important that, you know, the people beyond just the administration at Spring Creek see that this has value, because the rippling effect to reducing recidivism, even if it's, you know, one person at a time, you know, will help. It certainly will. So if anybody wants to add to that, you know, I saw, you know, Mike, he talked about education and the business program. That's awesome. And you notice the thing he said, there's only room for 12 people, but 85 people wanted to be involved, and, you know, you had this overwhelming response. And so that's guys wanting to improve themselves, right? So that's got to be developed further, maybe provide more money, more infrastructure, whatever it takes, you know, because it's an experiment, and if it's successful, build on it.
So, not to put the spotlight on you, Bill, but what would it take for that to expand?
So I think we really need to think about what brought these guys here. Every single person that's incarcerated here took a different path to get here, and that path wasn't success. Very few people that are incarcerated here understand what success is and know what it feels like. We come from broken places. And for us to have an expectation that doing 20 years here and we're going to let you out and you're going to be successful is lunacy. We need to start recognizing very early on in their careers, for lack of a better term, with me, that we need to start fixing what was broken when they committed their crime. You know, what was missing then? What can we put back now that they'll have when they get out that will help them be more successful? The community is a huge component of that. Another component maybe is the lack of where they come from. Get away from whatever that was and find them a better environment where they can have that success. It's very, very disheartening for me to show somebody where they've been successful and they don't know how to deal with that. They're way more comfortable accepting failure than they are success. That's disturbing to me. And that's where I can make a difference, and the restorative justice group can make a difference, empowering this change by empowering these people to shine and show them the way and let them go the way and see how far they can take it when they're here. And then once they get out, what can the community then do for them? But not ever knowing success and ending up here, that's a no-brainer. And not instilling that in them before we let them get out, that's a failure on our part. So, you know, I'm going to really commit myself to that.
Hi, it's Matthew again. I would just like to point out that Alaska is a unique state in the sense that Alaska has within its constitution a mandate that prisoners be rehabilitated. This is not something that is really anywhere else in the United States that I know of, and certainly not anywhere on the East Coast. You know, all of their constitutions were written like 200 years ago, so this was something that was coming about in the 60s and the 50s, and people were having different thoughts about crime and punishment, and that's why our constitution is unique in that way. And it's, I think, another one of those things that's commonly misunderstood. Everybody in this room and everybody that's listening to this on the radio and everybody that's in the state has that right. You have the right to have criminal offenders rehabilitated before they're returned to your community. Criminal offenders have the right to be rehabilitated. Everybody has this right. And when we talk about the statistics and, you know, everybody throws it around and they play the blame game, like it's DOC's fault for not rehabilitating them. It's prisoners' faults for not stepping up to the plate and taking advantage of the programs. And there are success stories. Mr. Woodard is an excellent example of someone who took advantage of everything that was available and did his best. The sad reality is that that doesn't happen typically. We're getting better here at Spring Creek, and we hope to sort of drive an example that can make a paradigm shift in society. The community members that are listening to this and the community members that are here today, they can push for that change also. You guys have a voice through voting. You guys have a voice through demanding better results. You guys also have the ability to become more involved in that process. And I can't say that I have all of the answers, like, well, what can you do? Well, we're talking, and that wasn't happening before. We're identifying what some of the issues are. That wasn't happening before. And so it is an ongoing process, and we're getting dangerously close into uncharted territories. Nobody's ever done this. So it's exciting. But there may be pitfalls that we haven't yet seen. But I think it's important, out of like a civic sense, to recognize that you have this right. You're entitled to this. It's out of that same civic sense that we've chosen to try to show that we could be community members. I could be your community member. I'm Matthew. I live here. And, you know, back to the part about, you know, a lot of us do deal with guilt. We do deal with shame. We do deal with failure. And this is a way for us to sort of atone for those things.
I'd like to build on that idea a bit. And I'd like to invite people who maybe haven't participated in the conversation yet. No, you're great. It's come up a couple times, this idea of building on success, changing the idea of who you are, changing the idea of self-worth. Mr. Garcia said, well, he found this path through healing. I'd love to hear from some of you all. Like, what has helped you build this?
My name is Brian Riddell. I've been in prison 14 years, almost 14 years now. 14 years ago, I was one of those young kids that Mr. Garcia was talking about. Came into prison. To some extent, I had things that a lot of people didn't. I'd had a good education. I'd actually run some businesses, but I also had a lot of emotional trauma, a lot of issues. So when I showed up, I was angry. I also thought there was a certain way that you had to do things in prison. You know, I spent the good portion of the first 2 years in the hole, mostly for violence. And something to understand is that, especially if you're a young kid coming in, you kind of think that the way to make sure that nobody tries to hurt you, nobody tries to victimize you, that you make it to the top, is violence. You know, now that isn't very healthy in the long run. I'm paying a price physically for it now, But at the time, it seemed to be a solution. And I walked away from my faith. I still kind of had it, but I really wasn't paying attention to it. I was just paying attention to surviving. Eventually, I ended up coming back to my faith. And over time, I came to understand that I couldn't walk both paths. I basically couldn't walk the violent convict path and go to church on Sunday or whatever religion I decide to follow. I can't be following my faith and being violent and victimizing people and harming people all the time. One of the advantages I had is when I came here to Spring Creek was I kind of got tricked into going to the multi-faith mod by one of my friends that was in it. But it turned out to be good. I ended up going there. I did a bunch of classes. I started to really understand where my issues were, what my problems were. I mean, I've been anti-going to programs before that. And in there, I came to understand how much I needed to take responsibility for my own actions, how much what the reason I was in prison was my fault, my own fault. It wasn't anybody else. It wasn't my parents. It wasn't anybody else that had caused any issues in my childhood. That was bad, but it wasn't their fault. And about a year or so later, I actually ended up in charge of the multi-faith mod for a while, or at least as an inmate. The staff's in charge, but I was the senior coordinator and spent 2 years working on that. And in the process, I also learned there. I learned about programming. I learned about criminal psychology. I learned what works for helping to teach others in prison. So I can say, you can change in prison. You can go from the young, stupid kid that shows up to realizing you need to change, and then grab a hold of what you have available and do something with it. It isn't easy. I mean, I had the advantage that I actually at least had a strong will, and I decided what I wanted to do with my life. And so that's where I'm at now.
This is Taylor Smith again. And so I had one question on behalf of a greater part of this community inside of jail. You know, a lot of us are violent offenders, and you know, one big question that we have for the community is, what can we do to earn your forgiveness and to earn your acceptance and to make amends for the wrong that we've done? I know a lot of people want to make right what they've done wrong, and we don't yet have those opportunities. So, you know, a question I have for the community on behalf of all of us is, you know, what can we do to make it right, and what can we do to, you know, regain acceptance inside the community, outside, you know, outside of here, so that when we step out, we're not feeling as outcasts and we could actually have a successful reintegration into society. And so, you know, that's my main question for anybody that.
It's a big question, but do people have ideas?
I'm Patty Linville, and I spent 17 years as the Seward Community Library Director, and we did interlibrary loans for you guys, and off and on. And every time they would tell us, oh, we have to stop doing that service. And I always thought, that's ridiculous. But I wasn't one who was questioned. I guess I want to say, when they built this prison, I was here, and I fought against it because I didn't want a prison in my town. I didn't know what a prison would be like. And when you say you want to become part of the community, the prison was sold to us is that we wouldn't hear from any of you guys. we wouldn't, you know, there would be no interaction. That was the selling point, that it was going to be, it was going to help our economy, but we weren't going to have any interaction. And to me, I found that reprehensible. I thought building a prison to help your economy, to me, just didn't seem right. It didn't seem right. And therefore, I don't know, I didn't have any power to do anything other than lobby against it, and that didn't help. And so it just, and it's been here how many years? I mean, that was in 88, yeah. So this is the first time I've been here.
So it's your first time here. I mean, it's been here for a long time.
Yeah.
Has your opinion over the years changed?
Tonight? Yeah. I was actually, as a librarian, I was told frequently by my colleagues that I should come out here and do book talks and do things like that, because this was part of our community, or it was a population in our community, and I couldn't bring myself to do it because I just didn't believe, I still have a problem with, you know, basing your economy on incarcerating people. I just have a problem with that. So anyway, I am here though, and I'm really, really happy that you've enabled this, because I think it's very eye-opening.
So hi, this is John Woodard again, and Patty Linville, I recognize your name. I think Industries, did they do some work? Right, so a lot of the furniture in the library in Seward came from the Industries program that was formerly here. We did woodworking, and we built library shelves and various things like that. But believe it or not, the interlibrary loan program that you guys ran changed and developed a lot of minds, has a really positive impact there. And I don't know if it's still going on. Is it going on now? Oh, okay. And so, you know, one point that I wanted to make from that is, you know, over the years, it had a lot of positive effect, you know, on developing and changing people. But at the same time, it's an interaction with the community. It's the community helping some of the guys in here. And one point is we don't really have, or I shouldn't say we, but, you know, the guys in here now don't have access to e-readers and the various electronic devices. So books still are a staple for education. And so, you know, if the community library could open that avenue back up, it would be really helpful, because, you know, with the world going away from paper and books, prisoners or, you know, institutions still utilize them. And so that would still be a great way for the community to help. You know, there's books parked on the shelf and there's minds that need them here, you know, so if they could get that going, that'd be great. If there's a way to do that, because I benefited from it. Thank you.
Mariana Miranda, I'm the assistant superintendent. I'm pretty excited about tonight. I didn't know what to expect, but just like physically bringing our chairs together so we could all sit and talk and listen to each other, I think that we're already there, one step closer. Like you said, you know, you wanted to know what's happening over here and you felt a very big disconnect. I think a lot of the people here, incarcerated prisoners as well as staff, feel that same disconnect, and there is no reason for it. And I think this is the first step to a very cool thing. Very excited about it.
And we're going to end up, we have you and then you. Yeah. And then we're going to have to wrap up because life is like that.
Marissa Lipinskas, I'm a probation officer here. Earlier we had a little meeting and Mr. Smith, Ronald Smith, had mentioned it. There's, I think, a big perception from what people see on TV on how prison is. It's all bad. It's not all bad here. Yes, we have fights every now and then. We have someone trying to hurt themselves every now and then. But overall, this is a good place. It's a good community. So that's it.
One quick comment. I think it's important that we realize that this is a time of change and the mentality of prisoners is changing. And that really does need to happen and go away from more of punishment, harder punishment, and more of helping people. You know what I mean? I think that goes a long way. So, and I think that change is happening. So.
My name is Mike. I spent a lot of time here. And what your question was, how can you get accepted by the community? It's not easy. But one thing I found out that really helps is volunteer work. There's a lot of, you know, to make a name for yourself as a good guy and a helpful guy, you can pick any number of places, whether you're volunteer fire department or your local church or just about anything. There's a need. It's really hard to get your first jobs. I can't minimize that. You always wonder whether it's check the box or not check the box, you know. He's always worried that, you know, that somebody can do a background check just on the internet for $5 or something. So it's going to be tough. And just once you realize that, you just make the most of it, and you get things go your way after a while. That's all I have to say.
I know we got to wrap this up. I'm P.O. DeLand. I'm a probationer, probation parole officer here for about 5 months. But prior to that, I was worked for Seward Police Department, ran the Seward Community Jail for 18 years. So I have a unique perspective on how the community can accept people who have, I like to think of them making bad choices. Is that I've learned over time that I could be in the same position that they are, just as easy as they find themselves to be in, based on one bad decision that sometimes only takes a second or two. And a lot of times influenced by other, you know, drugs, alcohol, and it's not necessarily who they are, it's just the bad choices that they make. And by coming to that reality, working in the jail, it made me a better officer. It made me a better community member, because these are also the people that get right back out again. And I see them at the grocery store. I see them at my, you know, at elementary school. I see them everywhere I go. I run into them in Anchorage. And 99% of the time, they come up to me when they see me, and it's all positive. They're like, oh, yeah, you work in the jail, right? Yeah, well, I got a job now. I'm married. I got a kid. I'm working. And they feel the need to come up and tell me this. And because they feel that I honestly do care, and I'm not just putting on a front. And that's one of the many reasons why I came. I left the city and came here, because Superintendent Lipinskas is doing great things at this facility. He's at the forefront of DOC, of changing all these, adding all these programs, changing the culture and the way of thinking on staff and inmates. And I want to be part of that. So, but I think if we could change the way that society thinks that an inmate is, because back in the day, if someone was a felon, you crossed the street, because it was rare to know someone. Now it's the opposite. It's rare to find someone who's not. And so I believe once we get to that point, and with volunteer work, with people getting together like this, and realizing that, hey, these are individuals, these are people just like me, you know, and that makes a big difference. And one other thing that they need to realize is mental health plays a huge part. DOC is the biggest mental health provider in the state of Alaska, and it was never designed to be that. And that's something that really needs to be addressed. But yeah. So.
And with that, we're going to wrap up this conversation. This is just the beginning. We have people here who've never been to the prison before. Thank you all for being so open, for being open to listening to each other, for sharing your experiences. Please talk to others about what you've learned. And am I safe to say, Bill, come back? Yeah, or stay, depending on who you are. Thank you all for coming tonight. This has been really great.
That was Community and Unity, a conversation at Spring Creek Correctional Center, recorded with inmates, staff, and other community members on September 26, 2017. They spoke about life in the prison and how it can be part of the larger Seward community. Thank you to the staff, the administration, and the Restorative Justice Initiative at Spring Creek, and to the staff of the Department of Corrections for making this event possible. The show was produced by Eric Bork and hosted by myself, Ann Hillman. You can learn more about prison reform at our website, alaskapublic.org/solutions. Thank you for joining us. This was Community and Unity, part of Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk.